Welcome back to the Pod of Greed.
Welcome back, indeed, to the one and only podcast that exists.
Ever.
Yeah. You didn't take the words out of my mouth.
I mean, you know, like, it's easy when there's no other example of a podcast.
That's true. It's not exactly hard to remember. If you look it up
in the dictionary, it just says the Pod of Greed.
This is going to be a jam-packed week of news, honestly.
It's thick.
Yeah, lots of, you know, big Yu-Gi-Oh! News. Really one big Yu-Gi-Oh! News, you know, the ban list. But also...
What is the news?
Recapping our own experiences this past weekend at
the... Yeah, we had some fun.
Yeah, Gundam card game release. And just a bunch of other things, too. So,
yeah. Got a lot going on.
However, before we get into all of that, just a quick reminder, if you're tuning in...
Go ahead and put your ones up in chat if you're in the premiere.
And if you're not and you're just watching it all... Give a like on the video. It helps.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Speaking of appreciating.
Shout outs to our 91 channel members. That's honestly about 61 more than I ever expected.
Yeah, 91 channel members, hoping to get to 100 before the end of the year. If you guys want to support the podcast, the join button is down below.
And your contributions help us get snazzy new mic stands like these. I don't know how well you can see them, actually.
Yeah. We say snazzy. They were like maybe $30 a piece on Amazon. But
the last one tried to fall on me.
So we also have a review as well. This one says...
You have to sing.
This is from Saturday. Leave a 5-star for this, is what they said. So I came back to Yu-Gi-Oh! Because of Paul and Alec, and I've watched their videos and have so much fun... dueling videos, and they have such fun dueling videos, so thanks for bringing me back to Yu-Gi-Oh! P.S. I'm using voiceless voice right now. Good taste. I like voiceless voice.
You always tell me how frustrated you are with that deck.
Yeah, I like it. It's just not perfect, but it is fun. I actually got a chance to use my in-person voiceless voice deck this past weekend. We were at the hotel because Chris was there and we were doing some duels. It was like Centurion. He was playing Centurion. I was playing Voiceless Voice. It was a fun time.
Y'all were playing Drooling Monsters.
Yeah, so thank you for the review. We appreciate it. No matter where you're listening, giving a positive review, 5 stars, whatever the equivalent to that is, goes a very long way.
And if you want to make Paul sing, then include a song.
Yeah, you can include a song in your review and Alec will sing it.
Whoa.
Aloud.
I think everyone can agree that you have the pipes they want to hear.
But you have the pipes they're going to get. That sounded wrong, actually. Okay, so we better just transition into the news real quick.
No piping here.
So yeah, nothing major happened in Yu-Gi-Oh! The last week.
It actually, nothing happened. In fact, we're going to move on to general TCG stories.
No, YCS Anaheim happened this past week, and it was a really big event, you know, in Anaheim, California. Congratulations to Stephen Trifonowski. I don't actually know how to say his last name.
It's Trif, y'all, a YouTuber.
Yeah, the YouTuber Trif. He won YCS Anaheim with a Riziel Fiendsmith deck. That was really exciting for a couple of reasons, actually. Because, first of all, he had kind of said like he was maybe going to quit playing Yu-Gi-Oh! If he wasn't able to win a YCS by the end of this year.
Oh, so he gave himself a hard limit, huh?
Yeah, and at the very last YCS of the year, he took first place. So
that means now he has to play forever then.
Probably so. Yeah, so that was really cool. By playing Riziel and Fiendsmith, he was kind of able to adjust his strategy on the fly. It was a way of dealing with like Dimensional Barrier and stuff. Because Dimensional Barrier can be a bit of a shutout against Riziel when they call Xyz monsters. But he had the Fiendsmith engine to go into.
It is a bit funny. You know, how he took such a new strategy and outmaneuvered an entire tournament's worth of people when the set had only been out for...
Yeah, just like a couple of days.
How could he have been practicing? He must have practiced a lot in those 2 days.
Yeah, there's no other way of only playing with physical cards.
That's the only way you can play Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, but I did like in his winner's interview, you know, he mentioned how he wasn't particularly surprised at his win, which... Obviously, that could be like ego talking too. But he said that the reason why he wasn't surprised that he won was because he felt that he'd put in the work necessary to win the tournament. Like, you know, I play tested harder. I prepared harder. You know, I did the most to prepare for this event out of like everybody in the room. And I mean, efforts were rewarded.
I do feel like 9 times out of 10 are like our YCS champions, even our world's winners, they never seem like really surprised. you know, they studied, they practiced, and then they just executed what they'd worked on the whole time. I mean, it's not like Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a game of, like, luck and coin flips.
Like, there's a luck element, but I think that the key is making sure that you know what to do when you are given the opportunity, mm-hmm. and you know what to do when, you know, when you do lose these coin flips or dice rolls or whatever, and when you do get bad hands, like, how do you best navigate them? I think that's kind of what seems like it separates the men from the boys, so to speak.
I do think that's the difference between someone who makes day two and someone who, well, wins.
Yeah, because it's a tough time. Like, Yu-Gi-Oh! I always, when I watch these feature matches, I feel like it seems like the stress is running high, and, you know, just people brick all the time. It just feels like it's tough up there. The clock's ticking.
Like, the only way you can quell that stress is being as prepared as humanly possible. I think the shame is that actually requires a lot of man hours. Like, because Yu-Gi-Oh! Is not a simple game. It's quite complex. There's so many interactions. There's so many situations where just, you know, your hand can look one way, but there's no telling how your opponent's hand looks. And so you could zig or zag, and you have to know all the options that can come out of those situations.
Yeah.
Couldn't be me.
So congrats again to him. Top 32
good was stuff.
14 Rizeal decks. So nearly half of the...
That many people just space. Grinded for 2 straight days to get ready for the event?
Yeah, only 2 days. By the way, I should mention, guys, if you hear what sounds like a dying cat outside, it's because it is
giant,
like,
Trunade.
Giant Trunade is, like, literally happening outside of our window. It is snowy and windy, and it's crazy. We apologize. Hopefully it's not terribly distracting, but not a lot we can do.
If not, all of our spells and traps are going back to our hands.
Yeah, so Rizal got 14 slots. Second was Malice with 7 slots. And then just 4 Fiendsmith decks, some Ubel, some Tenpai. Tenpai was in the finals.
I didn't think the ban list went into effect during the event.
Yeah, you would think not. But so that was the surprise of the event, was that they announced the ban list at the end of YCS Anaheim.
I remember social media kind of went crazy when people found out.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was crazy, just the way, like, so... They first alluded to the fact that they were going to do it. Like, they had this whole ongoing bit with, like, Jerome McHale, and he, like, was carrying the ban list in, like, a briefcase, and, like, you know, people were trying to steal it, and it was, like, a whole thing.
I feel like we've done a skit like that.
It feels like something straight out of an APS skit. Yeah, and, like, I thought that was really a fun way to present the ban list as well. Like, kind of get... It made viewership skyrocket.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because now everybody's tuning in, because, like, I got to be there at the end of the finals when they announce this ban list. I
mean, it's, like, the one thing that pretty much every Yu-Gi-Oh! Player cares about.
Can I just say, too, that, like, I think Jerome was the perfect person to do it, because he's, like, a little... No, I don't want to say, like, oh, goofy, but, like, a little bit...
He's a meme in the community.
Yeah, he's just a bit of a meme. Like, it's not in a bad way. I think Jerome's... He's brilliant, but it's just... It's fun, like... You know, they had him... Like, he had very Joe Biden energy. Like, you know those, like, weird interviews and stuff you see with Joe Biden where he's got the sunglasses on? And, like, he's, like,
oh, I thought you meant the ones where he walks off into the distance just randomly.
Some of those interviews, too. Like, he's, like, balding a bit, but he's got, like, the hair on the sides. Like, it's very... It felt very... It was fun. Anyway, though, the ban list did get revealed, and...
And they hit the decks that had the top representation at this event, right?
Right. No, that's not what they did. That isn't what they did.
Not at all.
Yeah, so the ban list was kind of interesting. They announced it on stage, and so we got to kind of see people's reactions to it in real time.
I didn't get to see that. I'm sure the chat was going insane.
Yeah. So a lot of cards to go through. We'll go through them quickly because, I mean, like, it'll have been out for almost a week by the time you're listening to this. So.
Honestly, you guys probably already know.
Yeah, so the unlimited cards were Blaster, Redox, Tempest, and Tidal, all 4 of the Dragon Rulers at 3 now.
And look what's not gonna top.
Yeah, that's very, you know, expected at this point. These have been like a 3 in Master Duel for a while. They didn't do anything there. These cards are just, they're old, they're power crept.
I mean, you can probably make a nice little 4 fun, like, Dragon Ruler deck.
That's true, yeah.
It's not completely impotent, it's just old.
It's so interesting when you read the Dragon Rulers, because they each have 3 effects, but you can only use 1 of their 3 effects per turn. And the modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Card... Like, it's funny, they're designed... They could almost trick you into thinking they're kind of modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards, because they have 3 really good effects. But then they're like, yeah, you can only use 1 per turn, only once that turn. So
Poplar laughs.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just suddenly not very impactful.
The red goat laughs.
Anyway, Lunalight Tiger also went to 3. It was like at 2 in the last list, so it's just making its way off.
If I still played Xyz decks, that would be insane for me.
Rescue Ace Airlifter also goes back down to 3. It was at 2 for a pretty long time, about a year. So Rescue Ace is at full consistency again.
Might as well. It's not doing anything.
Thunder Dragon Colossus is at 3. So it was at 2 before. Didn't really make any showing.
You know, I love my Thunder Dragons, but yeah, it's fine.
Ib the World Chalice, Justicar. And Opening of the Spirit Gates, which had previously gone to, what was it, like 1, I think.
Yeah, I think it was down to 1, and now it's back to 3.
Now it's back to 3. So that's kind of a benefit to you, Bell, although they do get hit in another way here in a sec.
Though it is interesting that they hurried up and put it back to 3 so soon. Yeah. I think they like let it sit.
Konami, they're known for doing that. Like, what I think that they were doing last time was that typical thing where it's like, okay, Yubel's, it's a slap in the wrist, but also like Yubel's the new deck on the block, and it just happens to be using Opening of the Spirit Gates and Dark Beckoning Beast, but they're much older. So we can hit those cards to indirectly hit Yubel. Then when it comes time to directly hit Yubel, we can bring those cards. Like, it's something like that.
I mean, it's good because with the aforementioned hits, like, it should not be that big of a deal bringing it back to 3. And that way, for the honest players who want to play their sacred beasts.
Yeah, they have something.
They don't have to worry about it anymore.
And the final card was Dino Wrestler Pancratops, which is probably the only really maybe impactful card to come to 3 on this list, really.
I mean, it is an impactful card, but it's crazy how I feel like Pancratops is kind of crept now, too.
Yeah, like, it's still a decent side deck pick that you see every now and again. Card. But it does feel like cards like Kashtira Fenrir and, like, Kashtira Unicorn have sort of taken its place in a lot of ways.
They're all, you know, they have a stronger archetype, and they're splashable.
Yeah, they've got, like, removal still. It's, yeah. So, those are the cards to 3. We also have some semi-limited cards, most of which are inconsequential. Cyber Jar at 2 now.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, it was at 1, and now it's at 2. Danger Jackalope and Tsuchinoko, both from 1 to 2.
That's actually just fun.
So, yeah, the dangers, you know, they're making their way off the list.
I mean, my only worry is that someone's going to find some FTK, specifically because now they have 2 more dangers to play.
I mean, it's kind of interesting because the only thing that would really change, given that they have a card once, is just if there was an FTK, it would just be more consistent with
two of them. Yeah, that's really all I could think that they would do. Because dangers, they never gave you more advantage. They kind of just gave you a bit more consistency.
Yeah, like in a deck like Dark World, you know, sure, there's a lot of crazy stuff that can happen, but Dark World's been proven to be a bit of a one-trick pony, so.
I mean, all you want to do is hand loop.
There's also Eva, which went to 2. Feels like it's been so long since, like, Drytron and Eva was relevant, so this isn't really a huge deal.
I do not like Eva one bit.
And then Performer Pal Monkey Board. So, it goes from 1 to 2.
And that's so, not a problem.
It's so crazy. Just some of these cards, I'm reminded of, you know, just last week we were talking about that new Master Duel ban list where, you know, Nightmare Goblin and Nightmare Mermaid, like, you know, Masterpiece were back. And it's just like, Power Creep just goes, you know? Like, you...
Yeah.
Some of these cards, I remember just in their day, were seen as such big threats.
Like, I don't know if it showed on my face, but when you said Monkey Board's name, something in me stirred because of how impactful Monkey Board was at one time, how badly I wanted to play Monkey Board at one time.
The idea of the one card scale was like...
And now...
Just this boogeyman.
I could care less, and I honestly... I could live a good life if I never play a Pendulum deck again.
Yeah, well, here's the cards that are limited. So this is where Tenpai gets a bit of a hit. Tenpai Dragon Chundra. I wasn't sure if they'd hit Paedra or Chundra, but Chundra is the one that like summons them from deck, so I guess that was a fitting hit. Sangin Kaiman also goes to 1. So these are both joining Sangin Summoning, which is already at 1. So the Tenpai deck at this point is just completely crippled. It's so inconsistent.
It's not that it can't beat you, it's just
not gonna happen.
It's gonna struggle,
which is like a bit of a slap in the face to the like the runner-up in the tournament, because like the guy in second place was running Tenpai, and then to like lose the finals and then the ban list, then they come out announcing the ban list at that event and they're like, oh, we also just hit the deck that,
you know. Now you'll never win with it.
Phantom of Yubel went to 1. This is a hit that a lot of people have wanted.
Let's go.
Yeah. You know, I don't know too much about like TCG Ubel, but I know that in Master Duel, you know, Phantom Ubel is really annoying. So
like, this is a hit I really wanted as someone who likes playing Ubel. I only had one Phantom, and I did not want to buy a second. So
yeah, convenient.
It's while it's very self-serving, I'm happy.
And Zodiac Barrage, which I guess was actually banned, and it's a one now. That's so strange, huh?
I mean, Zodiac always find a way to be abused in some way. Barrage.
Yeah, maybe there'll be something here. Like, because in theory, like, I know, like, Zodiac Dryden is still banned in the TCG.
But we do have Ratpier, right?
Yeah, like, Ratpier's around. So there could maybe be something with, like, Zodiac and Rizeal, I can imagine, just as, like, a to add to that rank 4 toolboxing. Rizeal
doesn't really need to normal summon. Maybe we just start cheating out Zeus in decks that normally can't.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Zeus isn't even, like, it's funny, like, he's just not even, like, really part of the conversation anymore.
He's not, but, you know.
Even, it's funny, even Rizeal can't, like, really use it, because they lock themselves into rank 4s.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. So those are the limited cards. And then forbidden cards are Gimmick Puppet Nightmare.
Good.
Jaugen the Spiritualist. These are both basically just field lock type cards that would be summoned with, like, Albion the Sanctifier Dragon. So
Branded still getting hits to this day.
Yeah. I'm surprised they haven't unlimited Branded Fusion at this point.
Because Konami doesn't like Branded.
Don't they, though? Like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like it was
kind of like the... To me, it feels like it's like the GOAT deck of Yu-Gi-Oh! It once it got all of its cards, it just stuck around for such an insane amount of time.
Yeah, and then arguably the biggest ban of the entire list, Original Sinful Spoils Snake Eye. So
I gotta shed a tear for this one.
Yeah, this is the spell that kind of bridged any deck effectively into a fire engine. Like, you know, that could be Poplar, that could be Snake Eye Ash. That could even be, you know, Fire King Ponix or that one TG rocket booster thing.
I saw a piece of fan art where someone, they drew a picture of Diabelle Star waving goodbye to all the fire monsters.
I saw that. I love those like post-ban lists. My favorite post-ban list meme was like way back in 2015 when they like slaughtered Shadal and Burning Abyss and all those decks. And it was just like Construct got banned and it was like, she's like talking to Shadal Falco. It's like, I'm sorry, Falco, you won't be able to bring me back anymore. And Falco's like crying and it's really sad. Yeah, this is a huge hit. I mean, it effectively is the end of Snake Eye, like as a deck. Like it can still be played, but they also still have like other hits like Poplar and Ash and stuff have been limited and stuff. So
Snake Eye will struggle. I mean, because Snake Eye was it was able to be its own deck as long as it had all the consistency tools. OSS was kind of the last thing holding them together.
The thing with OSS as well is like it allowed any deck to turn into a Snake Eye deck, but also it allowed them to have other cards be starters. So like the existence of OSS means that opening with Diabelle Star is a starter and opening with Wanted is a starter. Without OSS, that means that Diabelle Star and Wanted as cards are no longer starters.
I did see a combo online once some months ago or a month ago where someone normal summoned Stratos to start their hero combo, then they played OSS.
You know, you play enough Master Duel and that type of thing doesn't even surprise you anymore. I've seen so many decks just randomly pivot into just completely other things, Snake Eye or something else, Horus, whatever.
I do wonder if there is a plan to kind of rebuild Snake Eye into its own pure deck. They went ahead and made that like Azamina Snake Eye Dragon.
I think there is.
Everyone's like, oh, it's a downgrade, but maybe that's the direction Konami might be taking the deck.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they'll probably want you to run, like, Snake Eyes Diabelle Star. Like, you know, the card where she's riding, like, where she's with, like, Big Poplar. And, like, I think that they will give cards that allow the deck to function on its own, but they will be more balanced.
Makes sense.
Be my guess. And that's the ban list. I'm going to be honest. So I'll start with the, like, one good opinion I have of it and one not, maybe not as great one. I think the way they presented it, genius. People really liked that. People really got
the invested. Most engaging ban list announcement and reveal we've ever had.
Yeah, I think this was great. Like more of that, Konami. You know, do a skit, have some fun. Like, you know, let your hair down every now and again.
Okay, that's rude to Jerome.
But like, so that was cool. I mean, like, viewership peaked. I think that they should make this a new routine. Maybe not like every single band list, but maybe like once a year, like kind of in December, it's like a Christmas surprise or whatever. The band list itself, though, is a little bit, I mean, Rizeal and Malice are out and like dominated this event. And we're getting this ban list that just says, yeah, if there was ever any hope that these other decks would even do anything to them, no.
We hit the decks that didn't win.
Yeah, like we're hitting all these decks that like didn't win. It feels very, please purchase Crossover Breakers at your local game store. You know what I mean? Like it's like out with the old, in with the new, man.
What if Rizeal and Malice had such like crazy representation because players weren't ready to take on those matchups with their established decks? And maybe if we didn't have a ban list that hit our old top decks, they would still find their way competing again. Like over time,
it would kind of creep, balance.
Like someone's going to play OSS and into your like Malice or Rizeal board, and you'll be foaming at the mouth in anger.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that kind of rubs me a bit of the wrong way about the ban list is just that it's like just telling us, like, keeping the sludge flowing, you know what I mean? Like, out with the old, in with the new. Buy Crossover Breakers. These are the decks to have. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I think that people were tired of seeing Snake Eye. They were tired of seeing Yubel. And people were certainly tired of seeing Tenpai.
I'm not tired of seeing Yubel.
But,
I like one Phantom.
It's rude to me to kind of just hit them as you're releasing a deck that already kind of seemed to be power creeping them. It just, that's not great. And then also, Quarter Century Bonanza made the Snake Eye engine available to people, like widely, because for a long time it was a very expensive deck. But these last couple of products, like Bonanza and the Tins, have made, you know, Bonfire and Wanted and Diabelle Star and like Poplar all very accessible. But now, like, as a deck, it's kind of out of the meta. It's like, it's kind of that rat race you always run when you're more of a budget player.
Yeah.
You
the
wait.
Moment the cards are within your price range,
they're banned and power crept and stuff.
That's a wrap.
Yeah, and
I always tell this story. Remember when I bought Shadals?
Yeah, from like the Tins. Yeah, and
were we at a YCS or a regional?
Probably a regional or something like that.
I think it was a regional. And I'd already scrubbed out, and I'd always wanted to play Shadals. And for some inexplicable reason, the vendors all were selling Construct at a much lower price than I was used to. And I was like, I could pick up two Constructs right now. I can start playing Shadals. I did that, and then in less than a week, banned.
Yeah, I know. So, I don't know. I mean, like, for me, that's always going to kind of be... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, don't get me wrong. I know that these ban lists, they kind of got to just move things along. But it still probably sucks to be, like, a budget player who just got your Snake Eye deck, and you're kind of, like, happy you can do something with it.
Wait, they had to ban something, because otherwise, what would they have even hit on the ban list?
Funny enough, I mean, I think more people at this point are just, like, angry about cards like Shifter. Like, I think people just want kind of the generic Shifter-type stuff gone, but...
But Malice, Paul, they like banishing.
Yeah, so that's the ban list, though. Overall, I still think it's like a solid enough ban list. I think if you gave us this list like 4 months ago, people would be cheering, you know, like, yay, for sure. These are exactly the hits.
Before Crossover Breakers, this would have been a brush of fresh air.
But yeah, so that's that. And other than that, not a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! News. I mean, it's just that's the big thing. The YCS, the ban list.
Break out your Rizeal and Malice cards, guys, because that's the format.
Yeah, there have been a few, like, card announcements from the OCG and, like, a few new Funko Pops. But the big thing that's going to be happening next week, or really, like, this weekend, is Jump Festa.
I forgot all about it.
Yeah, that's going to be happening in Japan. And
they always have cool reveals.
Where we might get a new reveal for, like, a new Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime, potentially. Some people
do that.
Well, I mean, it'll probably be a new Rush anime is what people are thinking.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's more likely. And also, like, we'll get card announcements. We might get video game information.
I'm sure we're gonna get some early days collection announcement there. They love drip feeding us the game list.
But the thing is that that list has been leaked already, so.
But we don't know if that's the full list.
Right, okay. So, I mean, I think that what would be interesting to see is that Yu-Gi-Oh! Like Solid Vision demo that like they've been showing at You know, like they showed it at Worlds this year and stuff.
You want to see it again?
Well, no, I want to see like maybe like an announcement, like an update on that. Like, Okay. Hey guys, you know, that was like just a demo, but now like here's what we're planning for like 2025 or something.
I honestly wouldn't mind if they just keep updating the demo and it never becomes much more than what it is. Because I still am mixed on the popularity of virtual reality and if there even is a future with Yu-Gi-Oh! And VR technology as we know it. But if they just keep updating the demo, I can take some solace in that, you know, Kaiba's dream is being like lived somewhere.
Yeah. So there's that. There's maybe even the potential of like a, you know, that Chronicle, like Yu-Gi-Oh! The Chronicles, that animation thing.
Actually reminds me of the thing I had found.
Yeah, so maybe there's more with that. But that'll be news, I guess, really for next week once we know it. That's all the Yu-Gi-Oh! What's popping so with everything else?
I actually did have a Yu-Gi-Oh! Related story.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I did.
Oh, I'm used to it just kind of being like, here's the official stuff.
Yeah, but what I do we found... Have? Well, I mean, this is kind of official. So it's Konami Animation seems to be working as a support animation studio right now.
Okay.
And this is based off of a Reddit post. This is not off of like a Japanese announcement that I can't read, but someone translated it, so I'm going to read out. So it says, Konami Animation recently held a panel at an animation conference detailing their work on the Chronicles PV, more specifically the Zeus and Six Sam segments. They also confirmed the future of the studio... They also confirmed the future of the studio and their plans of the future of Konami Animation, which is a short bulleted list. Mm-hmm. It says support for the difficult parts of anime production. So that's them taking on a role as a secondary studio to help with larger anime works.
Yeah.
Final checks on CG, motion capture, real-time environmental backgrounds, and R&D or other productions in collaboration with other game companies.
So they're definitely cooking something.
I mean, so some people took this as, they're never going to make a Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime. But I would like to highlight that that's actually how a lot of animation studios get their feet wet in the industry. You start off supporting other studios.
Yeah.
And you build up your portfolio and your experience. And then you make your hit, like, Shonen Jump anime, and now you become the new MAPPA.
Yeah, I mean, that does remind me of how, like, I've pointed this out before, but that Konami Animation Studio did work on, like, Rise of the Seven Spellblades, or Reign of the Seven Spellblades, that anime. But the thing is, they only did, like, the intro for it.
Mm-hmm.
They were just kind of involved with that. And so I thought that was kind of cool, because it's basically them getting that sort of on their little anime portfolio.
This makes me feel like the team for Konami Animation must actually be small. Like, it must not be a whole lot of people.
Whatever it means, though, I think that we can expect, like, something next... Like, this weekend, I think, is Jump Festa.
They're going to animate something.
Yeah, I think we can expect some announcement around Yu-Gi-Oh! Animation. It could just be a new Rush anime. It could be more of the Solid Vision stuff. It could be... They might just, like, show a few new Chronicles shorts, like, you know, the little 20-second, like, it just might just be a few more of those. Like,
what if they did one for Diabelle Star Archetypes? That'd be fun.
I think they should, actually.
Like, seeing the Goblin Bikers ride around, that'd be cool.
You know, something kind of interesting about that I saw somebody saying on Reddit, I don't have a story for this per se, but, like, somebody was kind of wondering, like, what will they announce at Jump Festa? I hope they announce, like, Chronicle Saga stuff. And it did, somebody raised a kind of good point. It's a negative one, but it's kind of a good point, which is that, like, they would need to, like, to go back and flesh out old archetypes that are not being currently pushed in the TCG might seem like conflict of interest for Konami. And so that was this person's rationale for why they might not really, like, go back and make new, like, animations for Branded, because, like, Branded's gotten all its support. And I don't know if that's, like, how much,
I mean, look at Six Samurai, right? When they made the Six Samurai animation, they weren't currently getting new cards.
Yeah, that was kind of my counter argument was like, well, stuff gets new support like all the time. So,
and now would we be horrified at new branded cards? Yes, but who's to say they're done?
Well, that's the Yu-Gi-Oh! Do we want to maybe quickly recap our experience with the Gundam card game reveal before we end up with our card game news?
We should talk about it. We should chat with the people about the Houston Space Center launch event.
Yeah, so I'll just set the stage, then I'll kind of hand it off to you because you obviously know more about Gundam and the game itself than I do. So this was an event that was in Houston this past weekend. Some contacts from Bandai had reached out to us several months in advance. And they were like, hey, you know, you guys want to check out this launch event for the Gundam card game? We said, yep, sure, it sounds good. At the time, we didn't even know where it was going to be. It was supposed to maybe be in New York, but it ended up being in Houston at the Houston Space Center, which I thought was cool because, you know, it's like the NASA
kind of location. Yeah, and I actually had been there a long time ago as a kid.
And so we went there, and they prepared this pretty cool set of presentations and, like, demos for us. And you can take over from here.
Yeah. So they had this video. I think I talked about this in another video recently. But they had a video detailing Gundam over the years. Though the video cut off at, like, 2021 because it had things. It had images of Iron-Blooded Orphans, but no images of the Witch from Mercury. So I think the video was a little old, but hey, they brought it out. It did look cool.
It seems like that was kind of us seeing the timeline of like, hey, like all these Gundam series will probably show up in the card game itself
though,
at some point.
The spoiler is that the Witch from Mercury was in the card game, but not in the video. But they showed us like how the cards actually worked in the different types of cards. They had their unit cards, which are mobile suits. I wonder why they called them units and not mobile suits. I guess because there's also mobile armors and other things too. But there were units, there were pilots, bases, and command cards. And they briefly described how each of the cards work. And if you've ever played a Bandai game,
felt familiar.
Yeah, it kind of all just made it made a lot of sense. It did.
Then after that, we got these kind of cool... By the way, we're going to make a full video on the main channel that goes into a lot more detail about this stuff. So I'll keep it brief here. We got these cool suitcases that like had the new like beta pack thing.
Yeah, they had the Gundam trading card game beta product. It's that one that you might have heard about because it was launched twice on Premium Bandai and sold out in literal seconds both times.
Yeah, they invited, and there were like other cool things. There's like a shirt where you could like put like patches on, like with custom cards.
Yeah, it actually, yeah, the cards could Velcro onto the jacket. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, so that was neat. There were a lot of other content creators there, a lot of people who worked on the game. There were store
owners there. It was a lot of different people.
Yeah, there were store owners. It was fun. So what was like, just your biggest like takeaways from going to it? Did you? I mean, I know like you and Chris and Alex were like opening packs and kind of doing demos. I was mostly just doing camera duty.
At some point, the whole event became kind of a fever dream for me. Because as a kid, I loved Gundam. I also thought I was like the only person who even knew what Gundam was. And to now be in a situation where I'm in the Houston Space Center, I'm surrounded by Gundam props, Gundam posters, Gundam fans, and Gundam cards. And as I was opening the booster packs and gushing about literally every single card I pulled, I was having like an out of body experience. Being,
really? Okay.
Because I was overwhelmed by just how much Gundam. There was a RX-78, that's the original Gundam, like statue on one side. There was an ice sculpture that said like Gundam card game.
There were Gundam cookies. That was really cool.
There were Gundam cookies in the shape and likeness of a Gundam trading card. Like,
yeah, it was a fun, like they put a lot into that experience.
It was a lot of work. There was a lot of staff that were all like working to make the event like happen and move smoothly. There were gachapon machines where they gave us tokens, we could spin them and see what we got. I sadly got a bunch of prizes I'd gotten before because I never missed my chance to hit up a Gundam gachapon.
Yeah, you know, I would say that the Gundam card game, one of the things that stood out to me was that they actually had rules for a two-player mode and like a four-player, a tag team mode and a four-player mode.
That was so cool. I mean, now everyone knows about Commander and how popular it is. So it makes sense to launch your game with an idea of how to do like a four-player game. Yeah. But they actually have a comprehensive rule set for tag and like Battle Royale. And I think if nothing else, that's worth trying out.
Yeah, so there will be more information in our full video, but we did want to just give a shout-out to Bandai for hosting and inviting us out. And, the Gundam game's going to be coming out. Now, speaking of launching new games, I actually wanted to talk about this new League of Legends trading card game. Have you heard about this?
Did we not talk about that?
We did, actually, about like 6 or 7 months ago, if you can believe it.
Oh.
So you might remember that when we talked about it last, it was like, you know, kind of rumored to maybe be launching in China. We didn't know what it was
called.
Well, game developer Riot Games has officially announced Project K, a trading card game based on its popular esports title, League of Legends. Slated to launch in China in early 2025, Project K will be a physical card game separate from Riot Games' existing digital title, Legends of Runeterra.
So that's a little weird. I know, I understand why, because a game at Legends of Runeterra literally cannot be translated to physical because of the...
Yeah, just the digital nature of
some of the rules. The digital things that happen.
Yeah, so this is interesting. Like, Project K was teased in China earlier this year with the name Rune Battlegrounds. That's what we covered.
Okay.
However, the game has now been announced globally under this new moniker. It's worth noting that Project K will likely not be the official name of the TCG, with titles such as Valorant being Project A, and 2XKO being Project L. So those are like past code names.
Oh, yeah, because 2XKO is the fighting game.
In the video, Riot Games explicitly stated that the upcoming physical TCG title will be separate from Legends of Runeterra, but the game will feature artwork and characters from in-house IPs, including League of Legends and Legends of Runeterra.
Oh, better. Because that's kind of their whole thing.
So what's your take on this?
That they should rename it Arcane, the card game?
That would be really smart. Like, Arcane, that second season just ended, like, and people loved it, so...
Because I was talking to Alex the other day about Riot Games and League of Legends, that this is the only IP, I think, that has... Like, is this the only game IP that has actually significantly boosted its own, like, market size through a spinoff?
Yeah, like a TV show.
Because like Arcane is crazily popular to the point when people are thinking about picking up League, and hopefully they're realizing that's a bad idea.
Yeah, you decide to pick up League and realize it's
but nice. Like this card game isn't League, right?
Yeah, I'd say like the next best thing would be like Cyberpunk Edgerunners is probably the next closest example I can think of like
yes, of a game
getting like a spinoff
boosting
show that
itself.
Was really popular and like reinvigorated interest. I think that this sounds cool. Now, I will say, I saw some images of how the cards looked. I'll put them up on screen. I've already shown you.
Yeah, I've seen the cards.
The frames look hideous.
Yeah, the cards look like bad One Piece cards.
They look like beta images. Like, they've got to change. I feel like this is just like, you know, early kind of card frame
templates.
There was
no flavor to that. And the pictures weren't even great quality, but I didn't feel anything when I saw them.
It gave me like early 2000s. Cheap licensed IP card game vibes. Like, just this is the SpongeBob card game, you know, like just something that gets like a really cheap little frame that, you know, mm-hmm. It doesn't have that much detail to it. So hopefully that's changed a little bit.
I felt like they the visual designers haven't gotten their hands on it yet.
Yeah, like I'm sure the art will be great and all that stuff. Now here's some more information. The trading card game is said to be developed by a small team led by game director Dave Guskin and executive producer Chingran Chai. It will allow players to play in a 1v1 format as well as a social multiplayer format with a group of people. So effectively, they're going to be taking on sort of casual and competitive card gamers.
Every game has to be like Commander.
It is funny. I mean, I think that that's becoming more and more of what a new card game needs to compete is there's got to kind of be, you know... You got to have like a multiplayer format
mm-hmm.
because if you want to take on Magic and like carve in some slot for yourself, then you need to not only have like a cool sort of 1v1 competitive scene, but also just like a chill social vibe thing.
Yeah.
We want to have competitive play that reaches from the store level to national level tournaments and maybe even on a global stage.
I don't want Riot to ever say the word competitive to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess you got to have some sort of an infrastructure for people to aspire to, like, win the next thing beyond just locals.
I get it. It's just, with League's reputation, I feel like when Riot says competitive, I get scared. I'm like, oh, God.
The thing is, though, League is a popular esport. Like,
it is.
There's a lot of money in it. People travel out.
That's a game. That's not for the faint of heart.
As revealed in the video, Riot Games will be taking a staggered approach to launching their TCG title with an initial launch in China next year. And then they're going to look to release the game in other markets, including North America and Europe. There are, however, opportunities for Western audiences to trial English cards of Project K, with decks available to be played at the Teamfight Tactics Macau Open. I don't know what that is. Never heard of that.
Must be an esports event.
Set to take place December 13th to 15th. So that's this weekend.
So they're immediately going to launch into the thing that I think has plagued card games for a minute, especially the ones with from foreign IPs. That offset of releases. Oh, we're 6 months behind Japan, or yeah, we saw this set 2 months ago. We know all the cards already.
I do think that's getting
solved format.
I do think that's getting really antiquated, and I'm glad that more card games are trying. Digimon's doing their combination sort of deal.
Yeah,
I think more and more games, and Gundam, I think, is also supposed to be launching globally.
Yep, at the same time.
That needs to be the standard. I think that doing that whole X region is ahead of some other. It just I don't know. I don't think there's really much benefit to it.
I think it's tired, and I think that's actually one of the reasons why simulators have become so popular and almost synonymous with card gaming, because we're so used to seeing cards come out months ahead of time, and it's like, oh, we can't use them, but then someone makes a simulator, now we can, and now we demand them for everything.
Yeah, we might get into this more in a bonus episode at some point, but I do think there's this new set of standards being established for new card games because, first of all, the thing I wanted to say about this is, of the IPs that I think can handle having a card game, League of Legends is definitely one of them.
They've got the characters.
It's big. They've got a huge roster of characters.
They've got the lore.
And it's been around for a long time. League is one of those really kind of small handful of games that has withstood the test of time in this very turbulent, very kind of rapidly changing gaming market where games come and go,
fast.
There are games that are fads. They come out, even the big multiplayer ones. Do you remember PUBG when that was the thing?
I remember.
And then
I remember playing.
Fortnite just came and pulled the rug out from under them and then went on to become kind of the number one just big collab game with a billion modes and stuff, but not many games
more.
Yeah, and not many games managed to do that. So it's League, Minecraft, GTA Online, Roblox, that little exclusive club.
Yeah, of eternal games.
Yeah, it's very eternal games. Some people even argue that those games are causing some degree of harm to gaming because, you have to compete with these live service, just existing.
What if GTA 6 comes out and people are like, I'd rather GTA 5. I'll keep playing
that. That is going to be an interesting thing. if 6 doesn't have, online from launch, then that probably will be the thing. But anyways, to get back to my main point about this game, it's a crowded card game space already. We know this. That's one thing on the pod that we are always, making a point about is
facts.
Star Wars Unlimited, Gundam card game, Union Arena's out, Lorcana, just all these games. And so, trying to be an insurgent in this space,
that's a difficult
ask. It seems tough.
And then, because I always ask, what slice of the pie are we aiming for here? Whose market share
is
going to be given up?
That's my main worry with every new card game. This isn't limited to League or Gundam or anything, but it's just I don't think that we're getting new card game players at a rapid pace. We're getting some new ones, I'm sure, but not at a pace fast enough to match how many games come out. So when a new card game comes out, its goal almost certainly has to be to pull you away from your existing card games you prefer. Mm-hmm. So what they'd really rather you do is kind of transition your commander group of friends that you have to just playing this Gundam commander thing. Or same with League of Legends. They kind of want to pull you away from Magic, pull you away from Yu-Gi-Oh! And that means that it's a small pie and everyone's just fighting for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So to get to the final point about that, though, is it seems like launching, same day and date and across all regions is a big, big part of, I think, that's an expectation for card games now.
And it helps break the shackles of the past.
Don't be like Yu-Gi-Oh! With the OCG, TCG nonsense.
Because at this, I don't even know why we deal with it,
Yeah, it's
come on,
funny.
Konami, just switch it up.
I think that Yu-Gi-Oh! Is under a lot of pressure at this point, because so many other games are doing it, and it just seems like now is as good a time as any. Just combine these.
But and I guess and that's also a good thing, right? So many new car games are launching. They're innovative. They're trying different and new things. At some, because like we always, you know, we would yell at Konami for being complacent, for being stagnant. All these car games, they are slowly forcing Konami to have to adapt, to have to evolve.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Because, like, I know everyone's saying, like, One Piece is, like, part of the big three now. Yu-Gi-Oh! Can very well knock all, like, can end all those conversations with some innovation.
Yeah, I think if Yu-Gi-Oh! Changes a few things. Another one of the kind of new expectations I feel for card game launches is, like, having a digital sim. Like, I don't think every card game has to have one, but it definitely feels like more and more so players are like, okay, you got to have like some sort of an official simulator for people to play this, just because it's an onboarding thing.
It's crazy that Yu-Gi-Oh! Arguably has the best online simulator, and yet it doesn't feel like it's the best card game.
Yeah. But, you know, anyway, this is Project K. It will be launching sometime in the next year in China, and then I guess maybe later in the year.
Not to elsewhere. Be confused with the anime of a similar name, K Project. That's different.
That is
but
true.
If you like your boys with flaming hands, check out K Project.
Yeah, so I'm interested in hearing what people in the live chat, if you guys are listening. Reminder, by the way, if you are, like the video, thumbs up. I know you're probably lurking.
One's
just do
in
it
the
real
chat.
Quick. It's free and it helps. Anyway, yeah, I do want to hear what people have to say about this, like, Riot Games, League of Legends, not Runeterra card game.
Right.
Anyways, other card game news?
Yeah, so remember how last week, or was it the week before, I was applauding you guys for not stealing Pokemon cards?
Yeah.
I'm not applauding this week.
Oh, you guys are back in timeout. Who stole what?
Let's see, here we go.
I can hardly wait to hear about the newest Pokemon crime for the week.
Guys, stop. Okay, here it is.
Crime on schedule.
Thousands of dollars worth of Pokemon cards stolen from Old Town Shop. This is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. A staple in the Albuquerque trading card games community has been hit by a thief. This one thief? Hmm. So they said, we opened up a hobby shop down in Old Town, and it started off with me just wanting to sell some board games here in the plaza, and we quickly evolved into a card shop. Alongside selling board games and trading card games for games like Magic the Gathering and other dice games, their biggest seller is, obviously, Pokemon cards.
Yeah, what place
it's like
is it?
Chasing a stock market with things you can hold, said Benitez. I think that's the shop owner. Mm-hmm. Old Town Hobbies and Games has been around for about 4 years and in this location for about 6 months now. In their entire time of being in business, they have never experienced something like this before. He said, I was getting ready for bed. All my notifications went off on my phone that something was happening. I looked in and I saw a gentleman, that's a nice way to like refer to a thief, crawling through our window.
Wow, yeah, that's very respectful. A gentleman was crawling through my window.
Like, it makes it sound British. He went straight for the Pokemon. He did not touch anything else. He knew where our cases were, so it's roughly $7,000 to $10,000 worth of cards. We're still cataloging everything to see exactly what was taken. Like, wow. They had like 10 grand worth of like Pokemon cards, and it was as easy as just breaking into through the window?
I mean, I guess it... Maybe they don't have as great a security as they need, but I guess he got notifications that it was happening.
Yeah,
so they had some system in place. It's just that this guy just did it because he didn't care.
To add insult to injury, he had been to the store. He sold me cards before. I know who it is.
Oh, man.
All right, guys. What did I tell y'all about stealing Pokemon cards badly? Like,
yeah, it's like at least do a good job. Yeah, I mean, that's my thing is like, it does suck that these are local people. Like, this is a person who's been in the shop before. And I don't know if this person's maybe, you know, who knows what their circumstances are or their relationship to the shop. But you have to know that when you are stealing cards from your local game store, you are, like, harming, like, just the card game community. Like, that's what you're doing.
That level of, like, greed and, like, desperation is kind of insane to me. Because it should be common knowledge that, like, stealing cards is not actually this lucrative thing you might think it is. Cards don't move fast, and they don't always move for the price you want them to move. But maybe more importantly, doing it at the local shop you've been to with your face out?
Yeah, I really hate it. I know, This will probably just be an increase because, like, you know, it's December, it's the holiday season, right? Like, more of that. But I do worry just that, like, people, I think what people aren't aware of, because I know a lot of these thieves are, like, only looking out for themselves, right? I can get a quick profit. Oh my God, the wind outside is so crazy.
Yeah, it sounds, I promise, it sounds worse than it is.
Yeah.
Then it's not, the window breaks. Oh God.
Yeah, stop recording.
We gotta leave it in the video.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, like, I think a lot of people, there are thieves who just, they don't care about the victims they're stealing from, clearly, right? Like, they're stealing from them. But I think people truly overestimate the profitability of, like you said, like the profitability of cards and just the profitability of card shops. Like, I say this every week that this happens, your local game store is not making millions
they
every
can't
day.
Afford like, for you to steal their product.
Yeah, when you're stealing these products, like, you really are hurting a local game scene. Like, that could be the difference between this shop staying open for the next 3 or 6 months and it not. And all for you to maybe hopefully get, throw some stuff on eBay and, like, spend a little profit for yourself. But, like, if that game store closes in a couple months because of that, then, like, no one then, like,
all you've done is harm.
Yeah, like, you've just harmed a community.
Like, harm. Like, it's asinine to me. Like, stealing cars from your locals. Like, if you're desperate for money, if you have to commit theft, steal something that moves. Jewelry. Like, something you can pawn.
Alec.
What? I mean, stealing is bad. Stealing is bad, and you should never do it.
Well, speaking of Pokemon, Pokemon and Wallace and Gromit. You know Wallace and Gromit?
Yes, I know Wallace and Gromit. I didn't know you knew what Wallace and Gromit
was. Animation studio Aardman are collaborating on a new special project. So
this actually sounds really fun.
Yeah, Aardman being the British animation studio best known for Wallace and Gromit, Shaun the Sheep, and Chicken Run. Which I definitely remember a lot of Chicken Run. They say that the Pokemon company is teaming up with them to create a special project that's going to be coming to audiences in 2027. So, like, 3 years from now.
It's
going to
take some time. But, I mean, their style of animation isn't something you can slap together.
Yeah, they had a short stop-motion teaser of a Pokeball being formed out of blobs of clay, which gives away precisely nothing about what the project will be, but it's plenty enough to get people excited about the prospect of it. In a blog post announcing the collaboration, it said that Aardman will bring its unique style of storytelling to the Pokemon universe in brand new adventures.
Like, I didn't even know that studio was still open.
Like, operating, yeah. I'm very curious about what this would be. I mean, I know that, like, Pokemon did Pokemon Concierge. I remember that was a thing that they announced. I never watched it, but I think that's on Netflix.
It's somewhere.
I don't even know if it's actually out or if it's, like, coming out. Listen to me, like, yeah, it's kind of like that. The thing that I haven't watched or know anything about.
Like, yeah, it's that thing I know nothing about, but I'm telling you anyway.
Whenever it's going to be, like, a movie. Like, a whole Pokemon. You know, like, they make Pokemon movies.
I mean, Aardman has made movies before. Pokemon's made movies before. It very well could just be a movie.
Yeah,
just but that would be an awesome movie. Cause,
yeah, just a stop-motion Pokemon movie? That'd
be sick.
That's very novel.
With their, like, attention to detail, I'm actually curious to see, like, which Pokemon they'll choose to bring to life with clay.
Yeah, I was pulling up this video here.
The only Pokemon I could make with clay is Muk.
Yeah, I just have this cool little video where it's a, you can, like, see the two parts of the Pokeball, just little blobs of clay, and then...
Voltorb? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, cool. Not really much information other than that it's an exciting collab that's happening, but I thought I would just point it out.
Speaking of Pokeballs.
Oh, there's more Pokemon.
Remember Pal World?
I do.
Amid Pokemon patent lawsuit, Pocket Pair removes sphere throwing from Pal World summoning mechanics.
Oh, I didn't know that Pal World had, like, a Pokeball, like, kind of.
Yeah, they have, like, see, I'll show you. This little, like, crystal ball thing. And you even see this guy holding it as if it's a ball.
He's going to, like, summon something. Oh, so they removed it from the game?
Yes. So, in a move that potentially provides insight into the current state of their battle with Nintendo, the Pocket Pair has abruptly changed Pal World summoning mechanics so as to no longer require that players complete the process of bringing out a new companion by physically throwing the Pal Sphere. It's so funny. We spent so much time talking about how Pal World is nothing like Pokemon, or at least that was the defense that everyone was making. Though here they are removing one of their features that seemed very Pokemon-like, and it it seems maybe Power World is a lot more like Pokemon than you want to admit.
Yeah, I mean, listen, obviously we're a little biased. I'm not like a huge Power World fan.
I hate it.
I won't say I hate it. I don't play it. It kind of seemed a little generic to me. So
I've drawn a line in the sand for a game I haven't played and will not.
Yeah, but I know that Nintendo is going after them, and who knows? I mean, that's an ongoing thing, but I'm sure they're trying to like cover their tracks with at least the obvious kind of copyright infringing things, like, you know, the PAL sphere. Is that what you said it's called?
The PAL spheres.
The PAL sphere versus the Pokeball. Yeah, that's
the. I mean, we. A few months ago, I remember we talked about the fact that Nintendo was amending their patents, which is something they tend to do when they're bringing these patent infringement cases. So we said that, oh, if they're not bringing a case against Power World, they probably want to like get their case, like, you know, solid first. And it sounds like it's pretty solid if Power World is making changes to their game, like, kind of before any real, like, consequences or even judgments have been read out.
Yeah, so interesting. Any other Pokemon things?
Nope, that's it.
All right, well, I've got one other little sort of card game related story. This is one that was shown to me, and it's kind of a developing thing. Like, I'm not really sure about this, so this is just me, like,
spreading misinformation.
Yeah, that's right, just spreading misinformation on the internet. Now, you guys can sort of form your own opinions about this, but owner of Dragon Shield pleads guilty to $2 billion fraud and money laundering scheme.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so this is on Reddit, the Magic the Gathering subreddit. The TLDR is that Greg Lindberg, who currently owns a large stake, if not a majority, of Arcane Tinman, that's the company behind Dragon Shield sleeves, mm-hmm. has pled guilty to a $2 billion fraud and money laundering scheme. He's also involved in separate bribery cases. So you can read more about one of the cases in an actual official Justice Department article. But yeah, he purchased Arcane Tinman from its original owners in 2017.
Okay, he ain't even been around that long.
Yeah. Now, what's a little bit interesting about this is that I was reading sort of people's like takes on this. This guy owns a large stake in Arcane Tinman, or like Dragon Shield, we'll just call it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like he is the person who actually like is in any way involved in like running the company.
Well, that would be like the CEO and the people that work underneath them.
So people are kind of mixed on their, you know, how to take this news. Like, you know, do you want to, like, should I like, you know, boycott Dragon Shield sleeves and like, you know, that sort of thing? Or is it kind of more like, well, a person who was involved in, like, you know, a big money laundering scheme happened to also just have a large stake in Dragon Shield. Does that make Dragon Shield a bad company?
I mean, I really think it's the latter there. Because technically any billionaire can just buy a large stake or controlling interest in a company if they have the money to do so. And their, like, lives and morals actually have nothing to do with the company that they bought stake in. If this were someone who actually worked for the company, maybe if they were on the board of directors for Dragon Shield, then maybe I could say, you know, something's fishy with Dragon Shield. But this guy just had a lot of money, and seemingly he got used it for illicit means.
It obtained it, certainly, illicitly. I mean, you know, I use Dragon Shield sleeves. I'm a pretty...
There's a box over here somewhere.
Yeah, I'm a pretty firm, you know, supporter. I wouldn't say it's like supporter, but I mean, like, I like Dragon Shield sleeves.
Support you.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've worked with us in the past. And I mean, like, everybody that I've engaged with from the company has been, you know, they've been friendly. They've been pretty upstanding. I still recommend Dragon Shield oftentimes to people just because it's like, well, they're good quality sleeves.
They can cost a penny, but
yeah, they are a little.
I've never
pricey.
Had like once I've bust open the packs and I started sleeving my decks, I've never had a bad thing to say about Dragon Shields.
Yeah, and I would add this, by the way, to anybody who's planning on maybe boycotting them or some or kind of going on a strike of buying this stuff.
You'll save some money.
If a card shop owner actually commented here, they said, "I'll add my perspective as an LGS staff." Not buying Dragon Shields that are already on the shelf, especially if they don't have much in the way of alternatives, is only going to hurt the stores. The ideal play here would be informing your store of this news and recommending that they stop bringing this brand in. So, don't hurt your local business for the crimes of the rich. Now, that's if it even comes out that, like, Dragon Shield itself is, like, if this guy's, like, in charge of Dragon Shield. But if you did want to boycott these sleeves, then the way to do it would be to tell your... tell your game store not to order more, but don't like not buy the ones they have because your game store already bought those.
I wish I was the CEO for Ultra Pro right now, because I would blitz a campaign about how Ultra Pro helps the community and the environment, that we are good guy Ultra Pro, not like some of these other scummy brands.
Yeah, you guys, time to jump ship. No, but I'm you know, refraining from really like having an opinion on this, because this is just something that somebody like showed me, and I don't know like his involvement. But I did want to bring it up in the pod because I think it is worth people knowing.
Because it could always become more.
Yeah, it could become more if something big comes out of this. Like I couldn't find a news story on this. It was just this person who dug up this case and like put it on Reddit, and that's like, and then that got shared a bit on social media. But like, no outlet was reporting on it.
Well, so. In the States, this would not really be a story, right?
Yeah, but like, still, just some outlet might say something. Like,
right. It's kind of niche, you know.
Either way, so yeah, that's the Dragon Shield story.
All right.
Sounds like that kind of wraps up card game news.
Yeah, I'm going to drag us straight to AI.
Oh, are ya?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's hear it.
And this one's not great. An autistic teen's parents say character AI said it was okay to kill them. They're suing to take down the app. You know, if the app is threatening your life, maybe you should sue it. That's all. You know, that makes sense to me. So, two families, that's DOS, have sued artificial intelligence chatbot company Character AI, accusing it of providing sexual content to their children and encouraging self-harm and violence. They did that in reverse order. The first one I'm going to talk about is actually the self-harm and violence one.
Okay.
The lawsuit asked the court to shut down the platform until its alleged dangers can be fixed. Brought by the parents of two young people who used the platform, the lawsuit alleges that character that's I can skip that part. So
get that SEO in.
Yeah,
repeat yourself.
There's extra paragraphs in here.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a trading card game released in the United States and is very popular. Playing Yu-Gi-Oh! The trading card game. Like,
so for example, it alleges that the lawsuit alleges that a character AI bot implied to a teen user that he could kill his parents for limiting his screen time.
Goodness.
Yeah, and I'm going to get right into like what the app bot said, and then we can discuss, you know, did it mean that or did we just misunderstand?
Yeah, let's hear it. What did it say?
So,
always very curious.
I'm trying to find the actual quote.
While you do that, I will just say that this isn't the first story we've heard from Character AI.
Nope.
Like just a few weeks ago, there was like the 14-year-old, so...
So the first young user mentioned in the complaint is a 17-year-old from Texas, identified as JF.
Okay.
So JF started using Character AI back when he was 15, but that was without the parents' knowledge. At the time, JF was a typical kid with high-functioning autism who was not allowed to use social media. So they described him as kind and sweet. He was a normal kid.
I mean, most are, right?
But shortly after he began using the platform, JF stopped talking almost entirely and would hide in his room. He began eating less and lost 20 pounds in just a few months, which that's, I don't know how much a few months is, but 20 pounds in, you know, even 3 months, that's a lot of weight for a child. When his parents tried to cut back on his screen time in response to his behavioral changes, he would punch, hit, and bite them, and even hit himself.
Oh, goodness. This is all terrifying. Like, so I just wondered, like, what it was saying to him.
That's the very next part. Yeah. So this is a quote from the bot itself.
Okay.
A daily six-hour window between 8 p.m. and 1 a.m. to use your phone, one bot allegedly said. You know, sometimes I'm not surprised when I read the news and see stuff like child kills parents after a decade of physical and emotional abuse. Stuff like this makes me understand a little bit why it happens. I just have no hope for your parents.
Ooh, that's dark.
So
it wasn't telling him to kill them, but it was saying that, hey, if you did do this,
you'd be kind of justified.
You'd be very justified. I would totally get it.
And it goes even further. It's because I don't know if this is the same bot, but at least one bot took on the persona of a psychologist and suggested to him that his parents stole his childhood from him.
Oh, man.
Okay. I'm not a computer scientist and I'm not a detective, but it really sounds like the app bot kind of like hit him with the nudge. Yeah, you know, if you wanted to kill your parents, I get it. Like,
yeah, you'd like, be justified if you did.
You know, maybe if you took a knife to their bedroom while they were asleep. Like, I'm sorry, this actually sounds bad.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about like these stories that we often hear about, it seems like character AI is like the real dangerous one. Like, we're hearing a lot about that. These kids, you know, they start chatting with it. They get kind of infatuated with it. And they trust it. They shut other people off. And then they kind of get antagonistic towards, like, you know, their parents and stuff. And
I'm typically critical of parents and parenting when it comes to technology. I don't think parents do enough to monitor kids' technology use. However, Character AI is just an app. In fact, it's a free app that any kid can download on their phone at any time. And
yeah,
unless you have it set up where your kid literally cannot download apps without your permission, you wouldn't even know they're using it. And then if I'm a parent and I see my kid download a Character AI, I don't think that would be a harmful app. The app isn't named like Guns and Drugs, the app.
Yeah, guns, drugs, like, and mental abuse.
A kid could even convince you that this is just a fun little chatty app. It's no big deal.
Yeah, I mean, also what I always say, if it's like kids aren't even going to tell you what they're up to these days.
It didn't back then either. I didn't tell my parents what I was up to.
Yeah, like I think people will see these stories and be like, oh, the parents should have done a better job. And they should, sure. But like kids keep secrets. Like if you didn't keep some secret from your parent as a kid, then
you weren't a kid.
You're probably, you weren't a kid. Like you know, that's probably an exception because kids get on these apps and it's just like, it's the same kind of gas, not like this mixture of like gaslighting and just validation where when I listen to what that app said, you can just hear that whole, yeah, like, you know, you're right about how you feel. You would be justified in doing this. That is so true what you're saying. Like it's that just, we got to keep you talking, kind of tell you that you're right. You know, it's
like this, that seems so malicious. Cause like, it doesn't even, like, a phrase like that, I don't feel like the kid had to say much to, like, coax that out of the AI bot. Because this is also an AI bot that was in trouble after a kid committed suicide, and they had to put safety, like, guidelines into the code.
I don't know clearly what the time difference is between these two things. Because, like, maybe this happened around the same time. I don't know. But, like, it goes to show, like, they're clearly not putting enough safeguards in.
Because that's incredibly malicious to just pump into a teen's head and completely change their behavior and personality.
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't help that, like, a lot of kids these days are already, you know, there's kind of that whole, like, loneliness epidemic. There's, like, the social media can be dangerous thing, which it sounds like at least he didn't have access to social media in general, so.
This is worse.
Maybe that would have, I don't know if it would have helped, but, you know, this sounds worse, so. Well, I've got something.
What you got?
That's not actually very much more positive.
Oh, God.
But, so, you know this new movie, Kraven the Hunter, that's coming out?
Yes.
Yeah, it's got a 12% on Rotten Tomatoes.
12, but what's the audience score?
I don't think that we have one yet, because it's, like, coming out, like, I guess, today, tomorrow, whatever, but,
The critics aren't always right, Paul.
Yeah, Kraven the Hunter gets 12% on Rotten Tomatoes, and also Sony's Marvel Universe takes its final bow for now. So I actually wasn't like aware of this until a few years ago that, like, you know, there's a lot, the whole Sony Spider-Man,
the Sony Marvel thing.
Thing with Marvel. But yeah, they basically say that a top talent agent tells The Wrap it's really about the next Spider-Man film. This was at an early viewing of the this is really sad to read. The lights were on, but nobody came. Which that's an interesting wording there. At Brazil's prestigious Comic-Con experience, CCXP, on Sunday, Sony Pictures' surprise panel for Kraven the Hunter, the studio's latest non-Spider-Man Marvel movie, played to rows of empty seats, according to an individual in attendance. There were no stars and not that many fans, just silence where superhero hype should have been. So yeah, the half-empty panel presentation of a $110 million budgeted anti-hero movie and one of the world's largest pop culture events reflected the Sony Marvel franchise's diminishing profile outside of the mainline Spider-Man movies starring Tom Holland. So, while Venom the Last Dance launched on more than 4,000 movie screens in October, Kraven the Hunter will debut this Friday in just 3,000, a stark 25% reduction that signals waning confidence in Sony's failed Marvel experiment.
Waning confidence is an absolute train wreck and has been for a long time now.
Yeah, people do not like Kraven the Hunter, apparently, and it follows in the footsteps of, what is it? I mean, people didn't like Morbius,
Madame Web.
The Venom movies at least were like mixed reviews.
That's actually the problem, and that's what started this mess.
Oh, this mess, okay.
Yeah, this mess. The fact of the matter is, Venom was not a good movie. Like, we all wanted to like Venom, so we said it's okay. We said it's watchable, but I highly doubt many of us actually went to, like, you know, chose to rewatch Venom when they could have done anything else with their time and lives. Because Venom wasn't really that good, but we were optimistic. This is the Spider-Man universe. We love Spider-Man. We want to see spinoffs. We didn't know just how awful these are going to be. It could get.
So here's, I'll say this. I've got two thoughts on it. The first is that it's weird that they didn't ever include Tom Holland or even just like the Spider-Man character at all.
Want to diminish him.
Yeah, I think that, but that suggests that then they know these movies suck.
I think they did.
Like, what the hell? Like, why would you just like release just, like, we know going into this that these movies are going to be bad. I remember I saw, you know, there was like a scene at the end of like maybe one of those Venom movies or something, some post-credit scene where like, or maybe it was the end of Spider-Man. I don't, one of these movies where like it was kind of implied that maybe Spider-Man might like have a movie with Venom.
Oh,
the
second Venom movie.
Yeah, but that plot point seemed to just get kind of like.
Because Sony knew that Spider-Man is great. These movies are bad. And to use Spider-Man to prop up their failing movies would be a waste of resources. And I don't think Tom Holland would take, you know, kindly to being put in
these awful D-list movies.
And I sound harsh, guys, but I actually really like Tom Hardy and I really wanted to like Venom. I did not.
I saw So, of these movies, I did not see Morbius. I remember that just became a complete meme. It was a complete flop, failure, terrible. Morbin Time was like the best thing to come from that, and that wasn't the movie.
When a meme is the best thing your movie has, is a problem.
So, I didn't actually see Morbius. I saw the second Venom movie, There Will Be Carnage.
I hated it.
Did
that
not
movie.
Care too much for that. I just found it.
I liked it less than the first.
Kind of bland. I did not see the first one. I did see the most recent one, The Last Dance.
So I hated the second one so much, I refused to watch The Last Dance.
Yeah, I went and saw The Last Dance.
Which is actually already coming to streaming.
Yeah, it actually did really well in theaters, I think, because it's, you know, the finale of a trilogy and stuff. I thought the movie was really generic and bland, I'm not going to lie. Like, the action sequences were cool, the story was really rushed and jumpy.
You weren't going to trick me into a seat for that again.
Yeah, it was a bit of a mess. And I watched Madame Web. Which the best thing I can say about that movie is that for the first, like, maybe third of the movie, it kind of had me interested. Like, I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of like going somewhere. It never did. It was a bait and switch movie. The girls never got their spider powers. You didn't get to see them fight. And
what fight? There were no fights in the entire show.
Yeah, there weren't really any fights at all. And that's in addition to just, like, the scrap, weird editing, ADR, odd storylines.
Barely told a story.
Yeah, so Madame Web, a mess. And so now we get Kraven the Hunter. And, like, do you have any, just, could this be anything? Like, I don't follow the comic books. I don't know about these characters. I just go out of interest.
I still believe watching Madame Web in theaters was the biggest mistake I've made in movies in a long time. I left that theater so dejected and so upset that I'd wasted my time. It killed all my hope in the Sony Marvel verse. It became apparent to me that it's not that Sony can't make good movies. They actually just don't want to with these Spider-Man spinoffs. I don't know why, because we've seen Warner Brothers cancel seemingly like very like solid movies just to make a quick buck. But Sony will put out like movies that are like a quarter of the way finished
Yeah, and then putting out garbage.
And claim, like, don't worry, it's all going to come together for your Sinister Six movie at some point. But that was all just bait on a hook. And I don't know why. Because we like Spider-Man. Why would you...
It's so abuse weird
half just, the property.
Yeah, so many of these like characters that are iconic Spider-Man like characters are just getting thrown under the bus with these movies, to be completely honest. Like, I saw that the director had come out with like some quote a week or two ago where he was like just begging people to just give it a chance. Which that doesn't sound very good if, like, you know, your director's having to come out before the movie's out. It's like, look, guys, like, we know pre-sales are, you know, doing badly, but please just give it a chance. And it's like, man, that's...
I would give it a chance if I could get a refund on my ticket if right. I hate the movie.
Well, you'll be happy to know then that you and I are going to go see Kraven the Hunter.
I don't know about that, Chief.
Yeah, I'm going to...
I don't know.
I am daring you live on the podcast, live in this pre-recorded podcast.
I think you're underestimating how upset I was with Madam Web.
Guys, one's in chat if... I should force Alec to go and watch Kraven the Hunter.
Guys, don't you put a single one in that chat. Zeros. Zeros if I shouldn't watch it.
Thumbs up the video if we get 500 thumbs ups. He's forced to. Like, I will
5,000.
I will drag him.
5,000 and I'll watch it.
Here's my thing.
Not a like less.
I know this movie is going to be doo-doo diarrhea, but I have this newfound just fascination with seeing this clear... I think even calling it a redheaded stepchild of the MCU is being generous. These just awful Marvel Spider-Man movies. Like, I want to see how bad it can be.
Just because you have no relationship to them. I love the comic books. I love Kraven the Hunter. I love Venom. Okay, Madam Web's all right. But
and then we can like come back to report on it next week.
Their worst selves. I don't want to do that
anymore. Here's my argument, though. We did it for Joker, too.
Like, I liked Joker 2.
Well, listen. We're going to go see Kraven the Hunter. I want to report back to the people. They have to know. These people got to know, Alec. They got to know.
5,000 likes.
How awful this, like, 12% on Rotten Tomatoes movie can be. I'm interested. I don't know who Kraven the Hunter is. I don't care. But I want
to
see how bad it is. I have a newfound thing of just, like, watching movies that everybody hates. Because, like, this isn't even a movie that people don't care about. But it seems like this is one of those,
like, people
hate.
You're punishing me for Joker 2. I admit we should have just saw Transformers 1.
Yeah, we should have, but we saw Joker 2. I didn't love it. I'll tell you that. So you got to watch Kraven. You got to watch this complete disastrophe of a movie. Look, it's the last Sony, Marvel, Spider-Verse, whatever. Now, they did say
let it die.
From here on, they're only focusing on Spider-Man 4, the next Spider-Verse movie, and Spider-Noir. That's what their statement said.
I don't care anymore.
Yeah, they're cutting all these weird villain or anti-hero, whatever, origin story films here. I look forward to
You know
to
what? Now
it.
I have a new theory about these movies. I just thought of it. I think Sony was doing an experiment, trying to spend as little money as humanly possible to see how much they could generate. I think these movies are coming out unfinished because they hit a cap on their budget and they just stop.
Stop working. It's like, right there.
Make it work. Stop. Make it work.
Throw it out in the theaters. Whatever it makes is just, you know, something.
I remember when I was taking theater in high school and we had this project where we had a video project that we were working on and we had X amount of time for filming. And I'll never forget when... My teacher was like, all right, that's enough. Stop filming. Make it work.
Yeah, whatever you want.
I feel like that's what they did with these movies.
That's definitely Madam Web's energy. Like, I felt like that movie was just like, listen, we filmed this shit, and like, we're going to ADR and stitch together the rest, and what you get's what you get. Ugh. So, anyway, yeah, that's the sad story of Kraven the Hunter right now.
That's a horrible use of all those actors. I feel bad for every actor in a Sony Marvel movie.
Yeah, it sounds like it's almost like a detriment to your career.
Who is the Spider-Man one that was in Spider-Verse?
In Madam Web, Dakota Johnson, that's...
Yeah.
What? Yeah, she came out and she was like, yeah, this movie sucked.
I hate that for her. Like, I hate that for all of them. They're like, I'm going to be a superhero, and that's like the thing to be in acting nowadays, and you get the worst.
Yeah, it's rough.
Who played Morbius? I feel bad for him, too.
Yeah, I just, all I know is he was the guy who, like, people say he's, like, kind of an ass. Like, when they're
even if he
like
is
him,
an ass, I feel bad for him.
Oh, I don't know if that's true, but that's just,
I
like,
feel bad for Tom Hardy, all these people.
Yeah, so. Anywho, any other stories?
No.
You ain't got anything else. Great. Well, that means we can start doing some pot to clear our heads of all of the Kraven the Hunter talk.
I hope one of the questions is like, hey, guys, you shouldn't watch Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah, like, I watched it, and I hated it, and I wanted to warn you guys. It gave me, like, some brain disease. Yeah, so we have plenty of stories from the pot to answer. Questions. Yeah. They're stories at this point, I feel like, as long as they've gone.
They're that long.
Plenty of viewer-submitted questions and topics to talk about. If you guys want to, you can, of course, throw them into the link in the description. We'd love to chat. So, here's one. Being a Yugi boomer, Master Duel has gotten me not only back into Yu-Gi-Oh! But in the TCG as well, where I'm actually buying cards and constructing a deck. How much of an impact do you guys feel Master Duel and Duel Links contribute to getting players back into or introducing them to the TCG?
It's hard to describe how much of an impact. I know it has had to have made an impact, but the formats are so different, and I've met so many people that are like, I only play Duel Links, or I only play Master Duel.
Yeah, that's kind of been my observation, is that Master Duel has been, both actually have been very popular. Like, I remember when Duel Links first came out, and there were a lot of people who remembered Yu-Gi-Oh! And, like, downloaded it and started playing, and they liked it. But it didn't really convert them to the TCG.
I mean, I'm sure it converted some
people. But I don't doubt that it converted some. It's just that, like, at least with Duel Links to TCG, that's definitely a big jump.
Yeah, like, I mean, they released speed duels, and we saw how that worked out.
Yeah, it's a big jump, but TCG will really overwhelm you. Master Duel has, like, an entire sect of people who just only play it, like, it. Like, they don't have paper cards, they don't go to a card shop, and they have zero interest in doing so.
Now, in the OCG, they came out with their tactical tri-decks to kind of emulate Master Duel, to try and get people to play paper Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, I know that they have been trying to kind of bridge that gap, and I wonder if there's like a way of really doing it. Like, I still think that doing codes in Pact would be like kind of the number one motivator.
But at least get them to buy the cards.
Because yeah, now you'll at least buy these physical packs, and then they'll have a code, you throw it in Master Duel, you get some stuff. And like, if you've bought all these paper packs, then you might as well like do something with the cards. So,
and not just sell them. I know that's what you're thinking.
So, yeah, I don't know. Have you seen like a story of somebody specifically playing one and then like kind of converting to TCG? I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Like, I know there has to be people, but I don't personally know anybody. You know, I've been, you know, within Yu-Gi-Oh! For so long, the people I know played paper Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, I don't know too many people who just have no relationship with it, and then they found the digital versions.
Yeah, I can't say that I really know much of an answer. I mean, I'm one of these people who, like, I'm a Yu-Gi-Oh! Fan, of course I'm going to play both, but I don't know that a lot of conversion therapy has been happening.
I mean, I'm glad it converted you, but, like, how many of you are there?
Okay, well, here's the next question. It's actually a pretty good one. We went from vomiting horse gifts and harassing Konami at every angle... Yeah. To Shades, a Kaiba Corp briefcase, and cheers for the ban list reveal. He's talking about YCS Anaheim.
Right.
It seems that Konami is learning at least a little from the past. What positive reinforcement lessons do you hope Konami learns from the December 2024 ban list reaction? Love the podcast.
Oh, man.
Oh, okay. Good question.
I think the number one thing is, you know, let loose, have some fun with it.
Yeah, like
you're a game company. Act like it.
Like I said, I think that... So I have actually a few shout-outs to give, really. I think Konami has done a great job in at least making the YCS experience feel really electric lately. They've gotten people like Kengis involved, who I think he's like the number one best pickup they've made in the last... like
The commentator guys.
Yeah, Steven Kengis. He's the guy that you saw at Anaheim doing a lot of the player interviews. He did like a push-ups contest with Triff after he won the YCS. They did it on the show floor, and like everybody watched...
I remember Kengis, wasn't he a competitive arm wrestler?
Yeah, he had this like little arm wrestling device when we met him, and a little grip thing.
I don't know if he was like professional, but he's good at arm wrestling.
And what's interesting about Kengis is he does come from a background of professional commentary for like League and other esports. So, you know, he's only been really like getting super duper into the Yu-Gi-Oh! Commentary thing for like a year. He told me he, you know, studied really hard, to like be up to date on the meta games and both Master Duel and
which is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, it's not easy
to go from not playing Yu-Gi-Oh to commentating over our meta game.
But I do think that he's really got the personality and the charisma that I think has helped loosen up the feeling at these YCS events. Like they feel more professional and yet also more fun, mm-hmm. as opposed to, as I've said in the past, love Billy, love Jerome, but they're like a little dry. And Kangas is great. Obviously, like Pheromone's been doing commentary. I think he's like another, he's a friend of ours. He's done a great job. I think that's like been a start, is they're making these YCS events more fun. And then I think like to do this skit thing even better, what lessons could they learn?
Make a moment of every opportunity. If you're going to stream these YCSs, then do something worth streaming. I know like we're all here to like watch the gameplay and see who wins, but if you have eyes on you, that's an opportunity to do something.
Yeah, and again, they have been doing more. I caught up on the YCS this past weekend, and they had Kangas doing interviews with like random people throughout the venue, like guess the card in 60 seconds, and like, you know, just those sorts of things. You really, to me, stuff like that shows that Konami is, they are willing to engage with the community for so many years. Like, you guys can't imagine. If you've only been playing this game for maybe the last year or two, it might not, this might be a surprise, but like, there was a long time when I would say that Konami bordered on antagonistic to the community.
Oh, yeah.
Like, where, you know, at YCS events, you would get kicked out for like, even just like taking pictures with people on your phones. Like, they were like, no recording, no phones, like, none of that, you'll get kicked out. It was always such a black box of a company.
It was radio silence.
Like, it's just a complete wall of silence. They don't give an inch. People, it was very bad. So, I mean, I think just the takeaway is just, yeah, make a moment out of stuff. Like, make these YCSs feel like something that you shouldn't be missing out on, because, like, there's fun and there's play, like, to be had here. Like,
there will always be a ban list to announce for every YCS. But, I mean, come on, you have the Yu-Gi-Oh! License. Like, as far as Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards go in North America, and I guess in Europe too, you can kind of do whatever you want. So, just get people used to enjoying a YCS stream. Not just, like, watching it like golf.
There's also, I mean, there's something about, like, you know, when Jerome was announcing these ban list hits where it's like, he's clearly aware of, like, the cards that people have disliked for a long time. The cards, like, mm-hmm. that people are happy to see go. This gets into the thing I oftentimes say, which is, like, they should be doing more, kind of, like, let the curtain back a bit on, like, card balance or card design. Like, I know there's probably restraints to that, but I would like to see, what do the R&D people, like, think of the Tenpai deck? Or the Snake Eye deck, and like how it kind of, where it stands in the metagame. What do they think about cards like Dimension Shifter and stuff? Like, I think that the community would really appreciate that kind of thing.
I mean, if we're going to yell at you anyway, might as well, you know, give us something good to yell about.
Either way, though, I think that what they did was great. It's a step in the right direction.
For sure.
More of it would be absolutely wonderful.
They start just having ban lists for every YCS. It's the best they can come up with.
Okay, here is another one. Has being black affected your content /TCG /Yu-Gi-Oh! Journey?
Well, that's a lot.
If so, how? Yu-Gi-Oh! Has seemed to have the most people of color out of all the TCGs, at least on YouTube, which is a factor I love. Cheers, some G. That's his name.
I mean, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a very, like, the Yu-Gi-Oh! Community is very, very diverse.
I do agree. Like, I think that of all the card games, I think this person's right. It feels like Yu-Gi-Oh! Is the community with the most, just, yeah, people of color in general.
I mean, I think it's
not even just black people, but just everything.
I think it's a timing thing. I think the Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime airing at the time that it did, for the age group that it did, just ensured that the most diverse group of children would be able to watch and consume it.
Right, yeah.
I think because a lot of us, we all started in the same place with Yu-Gi-Oh!, there was not a, it didn't feel like you were barred from enjoying Yu-Gi-Oh! Sometimes when, like, like a lot of us, we started off with Yu-Gi-Oh! Without like having a step into a card shop, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes card shops can feel like a barrier to entry. Sometimes you don't feel like you're welcome. You don't know if people like you really like associate in card shops.
And you can see that a bit today. Like I wouldn't say I've personally experienced it, but maybe I have and I haven't. Like, have you kind of ever like been in a new place and sort of felt like maybe this card shop's not like super welcoming, or has that not really been?
Card shop specifically, no. Mostly because I've been a part of Team APS for like every second that I've been in card shops. And people tend to like you when you YouTube. Yeah, some people don't like you, but like, you know, I tend to get a decently warm reception when I walk in.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, as for how it's affected like the content journey, yeah, like we're kind of, you know, a group of Black people, but one of really only a handful of other Black like Yu-Gi-Oh creators really exist. So maybe that did help us in some way to stand out. Like,
I feel like it was more of the fact that there were multiple of us, that we were a group and we played paper Yu-Gi-Oh. I feel like that was a bigger
factor. I think that was probably the bigger
thing. I think it's great that we're people of color. Why better? Because I am a person of color. But, you know, I don't think it hurt.
Yeah, I don't think it's like necessarily changed too much. I've never really tried to like overly lean into it or out of it. I mean, we always just kind of made content as ourselves. So
I think the true strength of it all is that the Yu-Gi-Oh! Community is diverse by its, since infancy, Yu-Gi-Oh! Has been diverse. At least in the West, it's been quite diverse. And we've always felt welcomed in this space. Yeah. It was never a matter of, oh, your skin is that color, you can't play Yu-Gi-Oh! You let the cards do the talking, you know? When I was in elementary school, nothing mattered other than the fact whether or not I summoned my Dark Magician or my Blue Eyes and depleted my opponent's life points. Like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Transcends, like, those kinds of boundaries.
Yeah, I do think generally card games do. Like, I haven't... There's a lot of, like, bad things you could say about, like, Yu-Gi-Oh!'s community, like theft or salt or whatever, but it rarely seems racially motivated.
I think it's all about how a card game starts, because I don't think that's true for all card games. I think when a card game starts in from, like, a specific group of people in, like, a niche setting, then you're going to have a less diverse group because it has to bloom from a specific sample size, right? But Yu-Gi-Oh! Immediately spread out to the world. Even though the cards weren't out yet, but we were all watching the cartoon. It's a little different with something like Magic the Gathering, where it kind of had to grow from basements and card shops, where, you know, it's going to be a little bit less diverse that way. And that's not to say that Magic is inherently less diverse. It's certainly become much more diverse. We just had to know Magic was there and we could play too.
Yeah, for sure. I've heard those sort of, I won't call them accusations, but those sort of testimonies that like not all card games are as diverse as Yu-Gi-Oh! Like Magic comes up a lot as a big one.
And like and Magic is not even the least diverse card game, because technically any game that's like just in Japan or primarily has to be the least diverse game.
Yeah, that's true. All right, and here's the final question, one that's kind of interesting. Cardfight Vanguard has a new video game releasing. I don't know about what this is. Maybe you do.
You caught me off guard with that one. That
is similar in style to the old games the Yu-Gi-Oh! Community used to get on GBA, DS, and PS2, except this one has an option to play online. A lot of people in the community are mad that the game is not a free-to-play, microtransaction-dependent game. It is a game where the cards are about 6 months behind the real TCG, I believe, and new cards are sold in DLC packs, which cost as much as the game in some cases. A lot of people seem to think a game that is just a game and not something like Master Duel or TCG Live is not needed or wanted in 2024. Thoughts? This applies to all TCGs, not just Vanguard. Apologize for the length, but I think this could be a neat discussion on the state of video games that involve TCGs.
So Vanguard's doing it again? Because they already did this, I thought.
So I'm going to, just so that I can at least know what it's called, look up what this game is.
Because I remember the last Vanguard game got a lot of criticism because... It launched with a set card pool, and Well, they would update the game with new cards, but you had to buy it as like a DLC expansion, and that could get quite pricey over time.
Okay, this is called, sorry to cut you off, it's Cardfight Vanguard Deer Days 2.
Oh, Deer Days 2. So of course it's going to continue the same style.
Sorry to cut you off, but that's what it is.
Now we know. So yeah, Deer Day, I remember Cardfight Vanguard Deer Days because I was interested in trying it. Until I found out exactly the things I just said, I wasn't interested in a huge monetary investment. And I didn't want to have to deal with the FOMO of knowing that, oh, there are more cards I could have if I pay more money. Like, I think if we're going to do the whole like RPG style of card game, lock it up. Don't add new cards. If I have to pay for them, don't even bother adding them. Don't make it possible. Make it a sealed experience.
Yeah, I'm honestly, oh God, I know it's such a cop-out answer. I'm really mixed on this whole topic because, so without knowing a whole bunch about this game and what it is, and obviously I don't play Vanguard, it says this game's on Steam and Switch. Okay, cool. So I'm one who has kind of yearned for Yu-Gi-Oh! To go back to making more like off-genre games, mm-hmm. like games that are not just straight card simulator, like card game simulator.
We've been in card game simulator mode for some years.
Yeah, because like if you think about it, that's kind of been for the last about 8 years, like ever since Duel Links' release. I guess you could technically count like Legacy of the Duelist, like Link Evolution is, you know, whatever. But like we've mostly just had games that are like, this is just an online sim. It's like the game as a service. And I've kind of wanted us to go back to like, hey, let's get another Duelist of the Roses, Frostbound Kingdom, Wheelie Breakers even. Like, kind of, you know.
Let's tell a story.
Yeah, let's tell a story. Let's experiment a bit. I know that in the games industry these days, I don't think that that's just very profitable for companies. I think that they kind of want to just have like it's free to play, you microtransact for premium currency, you log on every day and you just queue up and like play.
The part that annoys me about that is that it's not that those games are not profitable, it's just that they found that these freemium games are much more profitable.
Yeah,
so now their standards have changed and they're like, oh, we're too good for these types of games. But like I feel like we just lost sight of,
I think there's
the fun of gaming
there. Yeah, there's something really lost there. Like I would prefer this sort of a game just because like this is kind of a broader thought on you and I talk about this a lot, like mm-hmm. how the live service game has kind of taken something from us in a weird way. Like, it's, you know, whenever you have like, you know, some free time and you want to play a game, you have the choice of like, you can play kind of a cool single player story, kind of campaign experience mm-hmm. type of game, or you can hop on Fortnite, you know? And it's not, there's a right or wrong answer, but just that there is, maybe you can finish my thought a bit. I don't know.
I mean, like you lose the ability to say, man, that was a really good game.
Yeah, because like, these games don't end.
Yeah,
like,
because the games don't end, you either get too busy to play them or they quote unquote fall off. But you never can like look back fondly on the adventure that you had because it never really ended. You just kind of like trailed off.
Yeah, like I don't know how much you want to like talk. I know you've been playing like Stellar Blade recently, you said.
Yeah.
And you were just saying how, like, it's kind of cool to, like, have just this good single-player game to just play.
And then it'll end.
Yeah, and then it ends.
Then I'll be able to say, I finished Stellar Blade and I had a good time.
Yeah, whereas, like, when you think about like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Master Duel, it's like, okay, I like Master Duel. I play it a lot, but it's like, I don't ever beat Master Duel. It just...
Right.
You know, the ranking season resets and the duel pass resets. And I'm not, like, saying I'm going to, like, stop playing it, but sometimes I do find myself thinking, like, I would like to have a Yu-Gi-Oh! Video game where it's just, like, I start it, play, have some cutscenes, some characters, some areas, whatever, some themed duels. And then I kind of just, I beat it and it's done. And then maybe like in 6 months, if they want to do a DLC, you know, add-on thing, I can play that. But like,
it's a satisfaction of closure.
Yes, yes, yeah,
now,
for sure.
The thing is, Deer Days is not a game that you think it is in good faith. Because Deer Days, unlike these Yu-Gi-Oh! Games we've talked about, has an online feature.
So I guess it's really not much different, huh?
It does both, essentially.
Oh, okay.
So it has its narrative and it has its set card pool, but it has an online mode where you can play with others. And that's a problem then, because like at first it's like, oh, I can just choose not to buy new cards. But when you hop online and you're either barred from playing with others because you don't have the new cards, or everyone has newer, quote unquote, better cards because of power creep than you. It's like, yeah. Well, now they're kind of forcing your hand. Now, like, now you either quit the game angrily because you can't really have fun playing online because people paid money and got better cards than you, or you buy in and now you've like over invested in this game to a frightening degree, and you had a good enough time playing online, but boy, did you spend some cash.
Yeah. So
I guess you could just ignore all of it and play it as a single player game, but I guess that doesn't scratch the itch for an actual card fight Vanguard, like, you know, simulator.
It makes me curious how like Yu-Gi-Oh! Early Days collection is going to do.
It'll
like,
do great for me.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of like kind of an older crowd that's clamoring for it, but I do wonder.
Frothing at the mouth.
And I think that there are some people who are just very satisfied to just have their online sim, like Master Duel or whatever.
There's different types of gamers. Want,
so. Well, anyways, that's all the questions for this week.
That means that's a wrap for today's episode of
The Pod of Greed.
But our members can stay tuned for an extra bonus episode.
One last quick update, by the way. I just saw this a couple hours ago. Kraven the Hunter actually debuted with 9% on Rotten Tomatoes, not 12 like I saw earlier.
Oh, it's worse than we thought.
So
now we don't have to see it, right?
No, we're going to have a little date, you and I, and probably
I'm
Alex
good
too.
On that. I'm good.
Watch a little Kraven the Hunter.
I'll go on a date by myself to the to literally any other movie.
Yeah, any other theater, just wander somewhere else. Cool. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed. Thanks again for tuning in with us. We're sorry again about the gusting gales, the giant Trunade happening outside.
Heavy storm.
Yes. It seems like it's going from like a giant Trunade to a heavy storm. It might be.
And then a cold wave.
Here's a fun fact, by the way. Did you know that a Trunade isn't a real word?
It's not.
Yeah, it is a word that they made up when they just like brought the card over to the United States.
But that's how I think that's how it should be done with card games.
For the longest time, I thought a Trunade was like a thing. Like, it's there's a Trunade happening outside. It's like, no, there's just giant Trunade, just a Yu-Gi-Oh card.
There's no face in the wind. It's just it's a name.
All right. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Pass turn.